Morning, Chair.
Morning. We power you.
We are good, Honorable Chair. Hope the same with you and your family as well.
No. We are good, and it's good to hear that you are all well and safe. Are we ready to move on? Do we correct?
Admin support should assist you, Chair, on that one. Bonani F and Advocate Gwebu.
Advocate Gwebu, Advocate Bonani, thank you for being here and organizing things so well. Can you assist us? Are we correcting and ready to move?
Good morning, Chair, and maybe from my side, maybe let me just start by apologizing for the last late start of the meeting. I had some technological issues. The network was bad and I couldn't start the meeting on time. Confirm that we have a quorum.
Okay. Thank you very much. As I said in the last meeting, we must always bear with one another, hate one another, because we are using technology and receptions are not the same in all parts of the country. But let me welcome all members and to this meeting and remind all of us that the ad hoc committee was established by Parliament on the 25th July 2019 and mandated to initiate a process to amend Section 25 of the Constitution, implicit that which is implicit, to make possible the expropriation of land without compensation. On the 18th December, the ad hoc committee called for public submissions, written comments on the 18th Amendment Bill to the Constitution of the RSA. Public hearings took place from the 28th February and by extension ended on the 7th November 2020 after being COVID-19 pandemic. I really want to take this opportunity to thank leaders and members of political parties represented in this ad hoc committee for the cooperation that they've shown and the sense that we are not dealing with a party political matter, but we are dealing with a South African matter, and that we all need to work together to find, as I said in the previous meeting, not to find a solution for any party, but a solution for South Africa and for South Africans. Now, we have before us a report that incorporates oral and written submissions plus the outcome of the public hearings. But as you know, we are a multi-party committee, and members of this committee take their mandates from their respective political parties. For today, we have not come here to adopt the report, but to receive the report and hear what it says, so that we can note the report. And if there are questions of clarity or where members feel that something is not properly captured or should be captured otherwise, we are free to do with that, bearing in mind that the purpose today is not to adopt the report, because members should go back to their parties, get a mandate on what has transpired at the next meeting. Then we will deal with the report and with a view to adopting the report, because we have to ensure that as we moved from the beginning as one, we continue to move as one until this process is finalized. So that's what I just wanted to say that today, let them take us, walk us through the report to ensure that it captures oral submissions, written submissions, and public hearings, and we check if there's anything left out which should be in, and so on. Thank you very much. Who is presenting the report? Advocate Bonani? Advocate Bonani? Advocate,
yes, sir.
Who is presenting the report?
I think it will be Dr. Twalo.
Doctor?
Kulisile Twalo, Banyaza Twalo.
Okay. Dr. Panyaza Khama, are you ready?
Good morning, Chairperson. Chairperson, I received a message that the member at the report themselves and then look at it and then decide on the things that need to be done. However, what I can do perhaps is just to tell members about the structure of the report and rather look at chapter 4 of the report in terms of the summary of the issues that are coming out of the report. I need your guidance, Chairperson.
Chair, point of order.
Yes, Honorable Murasatla.
It's not Murasatla, it's Honorable Masipa. I'm not...
Oh, Honorable Masipa, how are you?
We are fine, Chair, and how are you?
No, well, thanks, and the floor is yours.
Yes, Honorable Chair, Dr. Lodwick is still locked out. She is waiting to be let in. Can you allow all our members to join the platform before we get into this very important debate? Thank you.
Thank you. Advocate Romano, who is responsible for letting people in and out?
It's me who's responsible for this.
Okay, can you let in the other members that are not in?
Yeah, there's only, okay, yeah. Yes, she is in, Chair.
Oh, they are in?
Yeah.
Doctor, with regard to the report, I don't think giving us your conclusions. Give us the full picture of the report, the structure, the content, so that members are able to check if the report captures everything that came from the public hearings, the oral and written reports. You will recall that members requested access to the oral and written submission. I guess they did so because they wanted to make sure that nothing that was put in is left out. If you can do your best to capture everything for us so that members decide for themselves on how we move forward. Doctor?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I will improvise and start right from the beginning of the report itself. Chairperson and members, good morning. And this is a combined report on public participation. And it's a combined report because we have combined two reports in it. The report on public submissions following the advertisement of the bill that is before the committee at the moment. And members will also recall that we have actually went out to public hearings in the nine provinces, and we developed a report based on that as well. So that is why it is now called a report on public participation. Members would recall that the bill was actually introduced or was actually developed by the legal services of Parliament, and then it became the bill of the committee. And as part of that, the bill was actually first, because it was a bill that was initiated by Parliament. So we actually first advertised it in the Government Gazette in order to get the views of people on that as part of the process of the legislative process. That was done in November, December 2019. And thereafter, we then we did not actually receive a lot of submissions. I think there were less than 20 that we received from that process. And then the second process was to advertise the bill in the various newspapers so that we can solicit the views of people with regards to the clauses of the bill. And that happened in December 2019 and January 2020. And because there was it was advertised during the summer holiday, and there was a request coming from organizations that we extend the closing period for the bill. And secondly, the members also felt that we needed to extend the period in order to allow for more submissions to be made by members of the public. And during that time, members requested that we have a WhatsApp line where people can actually send out, send their submissions to Parliament. Let me also say that during that time, we never received any submissions from the members of the public using the WhatsApp line, even though it was advertised, the fact that people can actually use the WhatsApp line, and there was a number that was given out. We never received any submissions as far as the WhatsApp line is concerned.
My apology, Chair, if I may, I really am sorry. Is it possible for the, through you, Chair, for the speaking note of Dr. Tola be flighted so that we can see what she's talking about? Anyway, thank you.
Bonani, can you give me permission to share?
Doctor?
Yes, sir.
What permission do you need?
I need permission from Bonani to share my screen.
Oh, okay.
As the host.
Okay. Advocate Bonani?
No. Dr. Maria Paul is a co-host, and therefore she has the powers.
Okay, are you happy that she shares?
Yeah, she can go ahead.
Okay.
Can you now see the yes. Can you see the report, members? Can you see the report, members?
Not as yet, Doctor.
Not as yet. Let me try. I'm trying to. There is a report. Can you see it now, members?
On my screen, not yet.
Give me a moment, members. I will try and screen it.
Chairperson, if I may, whilst we're waiting, it's Dr. Lotrit speaking, if I may.
Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you. Chair, unfortunately, due to the network problems that we experienced, I could not join right at the start. So I did not have the opportunity to raise the matters that I wanted to raise right at the beginning before Dr. Swala now started with her presentation. Chair, this is very problematic that we're now going to have a presentation on a report and a discussion. We received it on Wednesday afternoon. It's more than 90 pages. Now, I know that we're now getting a presentation, but there is just no way that I can, in good faith, do my or do justice to my responsibility as a member of this committee by hearing this presentation, but I have not yet had the evidence. So I cannot see how we can in any case have a presentation and then do deliberations, because this is about an amendment to the Constitution. It's not just a bill. So we have to be much more careful, much more diligent, and I have serious problems with the process we're going through now. You raised at the beginning when I joined, you referred to us having access and sight of the written submissions. Now, that was only asked on Wednesday. Now, there is just no way that we can compare what we saw with the report that is now being presented. So I would like your guidance on this, but I have to say that from our part, this is a serious problem, and that I would suggest that we cannot proceed with having a presentation without having given us sufficient time to study the report.
Doctor,
yes.
your concerns are very much understandable. The purpose of today is not to engage with the substantive issues in the report, but we wanted the report to be formally tabled so that members can check whether the oral and written submissions have been incorporated, whether the public hearings have been incorporated. But and allow members to take back the reports to their parties to engage with the reports and prepare for the next meeting where we will deal with the substantive issues of the report. Today we are not going to adopt any report. We are just going to listen that everything has been done, and then we note the report and then send the report back to the parties, because we appreciate that all of you have to have mandates from your political parties. So don't worry, we are not going to commit you to anything. It's just that formally, the committee must refer this report to the political parties for engagement before they come to the next meeting. Thank you. Doctor,
Chair, can you, we've raised our hands as well about this issue that is being raised.
Is that Honorable Shibambo?
Yes. No, Chair, we have adopted a program on what will be the activities of this committee, and the program says today we're going to receive this report. I think it's opportunistic of the DA to come with a frivolous objection to a process that we've already adopted on. And you must be alert, Chairperson, to the fact that there is an attempt to delegitimize this process every time. Whenever we have agreed on a program in a committee, and today is what we're dealing with here. So to try to be opportunistic must be rejected with contempt. It must not be permissible for just to discuss come with frivolous objections on a program which you have agreed upon. Let's listen to the report and proceed according to the program that we have adopted.
Thank you, Honorable Shibambo. Honorable Lesuma?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would like to strongly suggest that we go along with the lines of an introduction in terms of laying the foundation of today's meeting. And of course, it will have an overspeed in terms of the dates that we accepted on Wednesday. Let's receive the report and give it time to reflect on it in our political parties and come back then and pronounce ourselves in terms of the report, and then we continue with our program as expected by Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Lesuma. Thank you, Honorable Shibambo. Dr. Lothric, can we Dr. Tuli, are you able to fly to me?
It looks like I can now.
Oh, wonderful. You're a star.
Proceed. Yes. Let me. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I was just outlining the approach that we actually used for the bill, advertisement of the bill, which is now reflected here on this page 4 and page 5 of the report. So in terms of the advertisement, the bill was actually advertised twice. One could say that, because we advertised it in the Government Gazette in December 2019, and the closing date was actually January 31st of January 2020. And then we extended that period to February 2020. That is where the WhatsApp issue came in, and also the request from organizations that we extend the period to the end of February 2020. When it comes to the public hearings, we had, members would know that we had public hearings in the 9 provinces in order to enable members of the public to actually give their views on the bill itself. In terms of preparations for the public hearings, we have been in contact with the members of the public through the public education unit, educating members of the public on the purpose of the bill, and also to increase awareness and the content of the bill itself. And also, what we have done is that we have transported members of the public from the various wards in the areas that were identified for public hearings. We transported them to the halls so that they can give their views in there. And I must say that when we were busy with public hearings in Gauteng, that is when the pandemic actually interrupted us, and we had to now change the approach in terms of people that were allowed in the halls, in line with the regulations that were applicable at the time. I'm just going to leave that part, Chairperson and members, and go to Chapter 2 of the report. Chapter 2 of the report deals with the written submissions that we received following the advertisement of the bill. And I need to once more explain that there were a few submissions, less than 20 submissions, that we received when we advertised the bill in the Government Gazette. And then we advertised the bill as the normal process now of processing the bill. And we advertised it, and the extension was up until the 31st of February. And we received submissions, and let me also maybe explain to members that when we received the submissions, a bulk of the submissions that we received were actually sent to the Constitutional Review Committee when we did the process around Section 25, whether it should be amended or not. Those submissions were sent to Parliament with regards to this particular bill. That information was included in this report, because we received that information from members of the public, and so the report itself, it concentrates on what people said about the bill, and then it looked at those submissions as well in terms of what was said by members of the public when they did the submission. I'm going to leave the part on the advertisement and go to the summary of the submission. One of the issues that came out, actually members of the public looked at the preamble of the bill. And what you see on the screen now is the actual preamble of the bill. Yes. And what they were saying with regards to land restitution claims, and they were recognizing the previous process that was undertaken by a government with regards to land restitutions and claim thereof. However, a view was advanced, my apology for that, that many people had actually received compensation, either in the form of land or money. And claimants actually had choices between land and or the money as a preferred mode of compensation. So the claimants, the compensation to claimants was actually achieved without the need to expropriate land without compensation. So the feeling was that there's a strong inference that the remainder of the land claims can also be resolved without interfering with the Constitution. And in essence, the proposed bill constitutes an interference with the Constitution and the values on which it is based or grounded. The second issue that came out is that farming on its own, it is a technical job. So therefore, people or government has actually spent 1.4 billion buying farms in the Eastern Cape to redistribute to aspirant farmers. And it was alleged that 265 farms purchased, only 26 remain viable. So those points were actually made in order to justify the point that farming is a technical job, and not everyone can be a farmer, but you do require certain skills in order to be successful in this. And another matter was that the change to the Constitution, it will cause damage to the economy. And the submitted actually felt that life involves trade-offs and one cannot remove property rights and expect to have a flourishing economy, and that foreign investors would not risk having their investment in the form of land confiscated in South Africa when they can pick any number of other nations that will protect their investment. So there was a very strong submission that there are foreign investors who have invested in the land in the country, and taking land without compensation would be a threat to those investments. An example of Zimbabwe was made in terms of what the outcomes of the land redistribution in Zimbabwe was, and that we should be taking lessons from that. And another point was that a floundering economy would have a negative impact on the amount of tax revenue that can be collected to assist poor people in the country. And if the state wants to acquire more land for the benefit of the poor and dispossessed, it can do so by utilizing funds from the annual budget rather than taking land from the people. Another point that seems to come through as far as that is concerned is the lack of demand for land redistribution. And this assertion is based on a survey conducted by the Institute for Race Relations, polling South Africans to determine whether they perceive to be the country's most serious unresolved problems, which concluded that less than 1% of the population was less concerned about land distribution. So that is another matter that seemed to be coming out. So arguing against the preamble in the bill, it was noted that the point of departure in the constitution of the country is that an expropriation should be just and equitable. compensation should reflect an equitable balance between the public interest and the interest of those affected, known as the principle of equivalence. That it is implicit in the Constitution that nil compensation could, in certain circumstances, be just and equitable to ensure an equitable balance between conflicting interests. The next session is in relation to the clauses in the bill itself. So clause 1A of the bill, it is in the box there. It reads as follows: by the substitution of section subsection 2 for paragraph B of the following paragraph, B, subject to the compensation, the amount of which and the time and manner of payment of which have either been agreed to by those affected or decided or approved by the court. And then the insertion there, or the one that is underlined, is that provided that in accordance with subsection 3A, a court may, where land and any improvements thereon are expropriated for the purposes of land reform, determine that the amount of compensation is nil. So what comes next is actually the submissions as far as that clause is concerned. And there was an objection to this clause on the basis that Section 25 of the Constitution as a whole already makes provision for courts to make a nil compensation where it is just and equitable to do so. And the belief that currently the courts have the authority to determine in each circumstance before it whether the nil compensation should be granted. That the court should remain, should retain this authority to determine in each circumstance whether a nil compensation should be granted. Also, it leaves Section 25 of the Constitution under the protection and guidance of the judicial system, which will allow for the process in determining on what is just and equitable. And if we take on to the next paragraph there, it also says that Section 25 of the Constitution currently makes provision for the development of national legislation to determine the circumstances under which expropriation can take place at nil compensation. So the objection basically is saying that the legislation can be developed where circumstances under which expropriation can take place at nil compensation. While other submitters were opposed to the amendments to Section 25 of the Constitution as proposed in the current bill before the ad hoc committee, some submitters were of the view that expropriation of land without compensation was necessary to as a redress for injustices committed in the past, for forceful land grab from the legitimate and rightful owners of land. So the submitters strongly felt that the history of injustices with regards to land must be recognized and rectified by the current government. Another point is that the land grabs that took place in the past subjected the rightful owners to indignity, landlessness, and consequently abject poverty, which is still felt even today in the country. And moreover, the rightful owners experienced continued abuse on farms, leading to insecurity of tenure, especially for vulnerable women and children living and working on the farm. Thus, government is obligated to ensure the dignity of people whose land was taken illegally and forcefully without compensation, to ensure security of Kenya, especially for the vulnerable women and children in the country. In order to ensure fairness, the submitters also advocated the view that there must be a limitation clause inserted on number of hectares a person can own, with the exception of land that is productive, and or serve the public purpose. So the limitation clause, would then apply to land identified for human settlements rather than productive land for subsistence and commercial farming. So the proposed provision or Section 25(2) also be made subject to Section 25(3) and not only be made subject to the proposed Section 25(3A). Otherwise, this will undermine the court's jurisdiction constitutionally to determine nil compensation instead of only by means of national legislation. The suggested change will mitigate litigation over national legislation, which have to comply with the Constitution. And lastly, under that clause is that Section 25(2) contains no definition of land reform. For the purposes of Section 25(8), the term land reform is restricted to reform, which addresses the consequences of past racial discrimination. A court may, however, in the absence of definition of the term land reform, where it appears in Section 25(2), attach a wider meaning to it. In terms of Clause 1B of the bill, which is actually, it reads as follows, that the amount of the compensation as contemplated in subsection 2B and the time and manner of any payment must be just and equitable, reflecting an equitable balance between the public interest and the interest of those affected, having regard to all relevant circumstances. That is what that clause says. And here, no submitters actually made a comment on this part, on the clause one of the bill. Clause 1C of the bill, which reads as follows, it's actually 3A, national legislation must, subject to subsection 2 and 3, set out specific circumstances where a court may determine that the amount of compensation is nil. Under this clause, there was a view that this should be added so that it reads differently. This is how it was proposed, is that where property was acquired without payment through donations, gift or through favorable low sale purchases prior to 1994 by the apartheid state and its subsidiaries be expropriated without compensation by the relevant government minister. A second point, where property rights and titles and title deeds are held by entities who obtained these rights at no cost through donations, gift or at low favorable sales purchases from the apartheid government and its subsidiaries, that these rights and title deeds be expropriated without compensation to the property beneficiaries occupying these premises currently. And lastly, where land was acquired from the apartheid state at no cost through donations, gift, or ceded at low favorable rate, that the land be expropriated without compensation to be used for social housing. These are the comments, chairperson and members, that we received as far as the clauses in the bill at the moment. What comes next is what is the themes that we got, especially from the resubmissions that were made to the CRC committee before. And what I would like to do here, Chair, because the themes are very much similar to the process at CRC. With your permission, Chair, what I will do is just to mention what were the key themes that emerged there. at the time. Is that fine, Chairperson, if I do that? Okay. The first thing that emerges is with regards to the rationale for land reform. And members of the public actually provided differing views on the rationale for land reform as advocated for in the amendment of Section 25 of the Constitution. And they include the following, that amending Section 25 is significant because it aims to address the historic wrongs caused by the arbitrary dispossession of land and thus ensure equitable access to land and further empower the majority of struggling South Africans to have access to productive participants in land ownership, food security, and agricultural reform programs. And that implementing land reform programs effectively is likely to give dignity back to Indigenous people whose land was wrongfully, illegally, and forcefully taken away from them. It will enable this group of people to participate effectively in agricultural production and the efforts in developing and strengthening the economy of the country. Thus, economic development will not be reserved for a minority group in the country, but all. Submitters noted that at this stage of our country, they submitted that that amendment to Section 25 of the Constitution at this stage of our country is misguided and unwise. Government must look at the impact of land expropriation without compensation as it is against the Constitution and in breach of international laws. Furthermore, the amendment is a political plan and agenda to dispossess the current owners of land who are mainly white, and that government must find other ways to reach equilibrium in terms of land ownership in the country. Also, it will not address the failure to implement land reform programs and the needs of the people of the country. That government must strengthen the administration of land reform programs to effect real change properly. The second theme is around custodianship and ownership of land. Here, the view relates to the state being the custodian of all land in South Africa, and that once ownership is placed with the state should in turn distribute land equitably for human settlements, commercial and subsistence farming, and industrial development as well. However, the national legislation and regulations should put a cap on the number of hectares that individuals should have or own at any given time. And the differentiation should be made for the size of land ownership between residential and subsistence or commercial farming. And there is a belief that the state's land ownership will boost the economy, create jobs for people, and deter private producers from monopolizing the agricultural sector. And moreover, the people will be exposed to land production, thus promoting food security, whether it is for subsistence or commercial purposes. It was argued that beneficial to the economy as a development agenda for the country points to land. The current land ownership continues to disadvantage the previously marginalized citizens and prohibits government from fast-tracking development issues when necessary. Furthermore, the ill-gotten wealth cannot be perpetuated at the expense of the majority by the minority group. Thus, the amendment to Section 25 will ease racial tensions, and there has been no good gestures to correct past transgressions of land distribution. However, other submitters were of the view that the need to provide land and opportunities flowing there from the government to the people should be funded from government land, and that people who currently own commercial property should not carry the burden of the government, and the willing buyer, willing seller system should apply and or continue. So the enabling national legislation to give effect to this constitutional amendment will necessitate further public hearings and will thus leave the market with negative connotations related to property market and related sectors. And this view is premised on the view that continuous debate on the land matter is likely to bring jitters to both investors and the market. The next point there is that the target of nil compensation as a default position for the value of land taken for purposes of reform is all-encompassing category of land redistribution, restitution, and land tenure security. However, some commentators have added land development as a fourth pillar of land for reform purposes. And that reference was made to South African Rating Agency, and that the consequences of passing this bill will be a failed state. Moving to the the last point there is that the principle of expropriation of land without compensation is unacceptable, as no person possessing property for which a title deed has been issued should not be taken without compensation, but according to market-related or orientated price. Another theme is around the security of tenure and protection of rights. Here, the emphasis is more on farm dwellers and farm labor tenants who were identified as the most vulnerable groups as a result of continued evictions from farms by farm owners without giving them a security of tenure following years of working on the farm. And that state ownership and ability to disperse land will provide security of tenure for these categories of people. Secondly, the amendment to Section 25 of the Constitution will enable those who still live in congested informal settlements or squatter camps, as we know them, will finally have the opportunity to own property in a form of land where they will be able to build their own houses. And that the state must protect property rights. If property rights are not protected, the consequences are dire, as the country will lose and discourage international investment, and therefore the country will experience stagnant economy, thus leading to worsening inequality among the people of the country. And government was urged to find a balance between the security of tenure for identified groups of people, that is the farm dwellers and farm labor tenants, including women and children, and the protection of property rights of people already owning property like homes and farms. So the security of tenure and protection of property is possible when decisions and administration of land reform rest with the executive instead of the courts. Another theme was around the protection of peace and security, where people felt that it will ensure that there is everlasting peace and prosperity, not only in South Africa, but Africa as a whole. Therefore, the amendment to Section 25 is actually vital. The bill itself must be extended to include not only land taken from 1913, but back to 1652. It is believed that the recognition of invasion of this land by settlers in 1652 led effectively to dispossession of land that originally belonged to indigenous groups of people who occupied the land. Another point was around that the proposed amendment actually exceeds the CRC recommendations. Let me just go to the bullet point there and say that the first thing that is said with in relation to that is that only a change that makes explicit that which is already implicit is provided for. This means that the amendment can clarify the existing powers that the state already has to expropriate land without compensation. It cannot provide the state with any new powers that it does not currently have. The amendment, therefore, as it stands at the moment, they go beyond mere clarification. Its effect is to bypass the relevant circumstances that currently determine compensation, as set out in Section 25(3) of the Constitution, and replace these with circumstances that have yet to be determined by national legislation. This grants Parliament a blank check to pass a law at a lower voting threshold of 50% plus one, setting out when nil compensation is payable. Secondly, the recommendations only use the term land. The amendment goes beyond this by referring not only to land, but also to any improvements on land. And this would include structures built on the land, like houses, factories, and dams. It also includes the products of cultivating the land, like crops and vineyards. Therefore, the amendment is unlawful because it exceeds the scope of recommendations made by the Constitutional Review Committee. And the sixth thing that comes out relates to the contravention of the Constitution and international law. What is said here is that in terms of Section 39(1)(b) of the Constitution, which requires that when interpreting the Bill of Rights, a court or tribunal or forum must consider international law. So there is a resolution on permanent sovereignty over natural resources, 1803 of 1962, that nationalization, expropriation, or requisitioning shall be based on grounds or reasons of public utility, security, or the national interest, which are recognized as overriding purely individual or private interest, both domestic and foreign. In such cases, the owner shall be paid appropriate compensation in accordance with the rules enforced in the state, taking such measures in the exercise of its sovereignty and in accordance with international law. So in the case where the question of compensation gives rise to a controversy, the national jurisdiction of the state takes such measures. However, upon agreement by sovereign states and other parties concerned, settlement of the dispute should be made to arbitration or international adjudication. Article 2(2)(c) of the Charter of Economic Rights and Duties of State Resolution 3281 of 1974 states that each state has the right to nationalize expropriate or transfer ownership of foreign property, in which case appropriate compensation should be paid by the state adopting such measures, taking into account its relevant laws and regulations and all circumstances that the state considers pertinent. And in any case where the question of compensation gives rise to the controversy, it shall be settled under the domestic law of the nationalizing state and by its tribunals, unless it is freely and mutually agreed by all states concerned that other peaceful means be sought on the basis of the foreign equality of states and in accordance with the principle of free choice of means. It is maintained that the current standards of international human rights law extend the duty of the state to pay market-related compensation to a state's own nationals whose property is expropriated, not just to foreign nationals. I'll move to the last paragraph of this page 15. Section 2 of the Constitution states that the Constitution is the supreme law of the Republic. Law or conduct inconsistent with it is invalid, and the obligation imposed by it must be fulfilled. Thus, the current text of Section 25 of the Constitution sets out the circumstances to be considered when determining how much compensation will be paid where land is expropriated. The actual amendment bypasses these factors and refers to national legislation to determine when no compensation will be payable. Instead of the Constitution reigning supreme, it is made subservient to national legislation. This approach is unconstitutional and vastly different to other references to the promulgation of national legislation in the Constitution. And Section 36, 1 and 2 of the Constitution, as it is stated in the first paragraph of the of this section, the feeling is that the amendment is a limitation of the existing right to receive compensation for land that has been expropriated. Furthermore, the authors of the Bill of Rights handbook state that Section 25 requires compensation for an expropriation to be fair and equitable in amount, timing, and manner of payment. So compensation not meeting these requirements will be unfair and inequitable and can hardly be considered reasonable and justifiable. And that lastly, the Constitution cannot be perceived as a barrier because Section 8 expressly says that the provisions of the section cannot impede land, water, and related reform. Furthermore, in the 1990s, when the land reform was conceptualized, the targets set in or articulated in the Reconstruction and Development Plan were premised on and or Section 25 used as a toolkit to do so. Another theme relates to unintended consequences of the bill at the moment. It is said that through this bill, we will have, the amendment of Section 25 of the Constitution through this bill will give additional powers to the state, and if the bill is passed as it is. The bill gives additional powers to the state to expropriate land without compensation. This power was not provided for in the Constitution or any other legislation before. The state must be limited so that it does not abuse this power. At the center of democracy is the balancing of the rights of the majority with the protection of minority Therefore, the state must seek to find this balance, even with the land matter in our country. The bill in its current form is intended to focus on land. However, Section 25 of the Constitution is about property, which includes movable objects, intellectual property, any registered rights, such as mortgage and notarial bonds and servitude, and any unregistered and informal rights, such as collecting wood or water by local communities. Thus, the definition of land must be provided to provide clarity, even when the courts deal with and or require to adjudicate on land matters. The bill introduces the systematic risk to the financial sector. The concept economic suicide is used to in reference to the impact of this bill and will have on the economy of the country if approved as it is. So it is argued that this will be an attack on the people without jobs who will in turn engage in criminal activities for a living. It is further said that the farmer whose agricultural land is expropriated will become a squatter and depend on government for a living, as agricultural land constitutes a pension for the landowner. Thus, the ownership of land serves as a financial security for farmers on retirement. The expropriation of land without compensation will lower the value of farmland. Thus, banks will not be in a position to borrow money to those who want to develop the land as a direct result of expropriation without compensation. Banks will thus be affected negatively by the act of expropriating land without compensation. So tampering with Section 25 will have unintended consequences and directly degrade Chapter 2 of the Constitution, which contains the Bill of Rights. And there are two points made under that. The first one is that the current formulation of Section 25, properly applied, could result in the court determining that in a particular circumstance, we're taking into account all relevant factors, it would be just and equitable to award compensation, which is substantially low market value, or even in every rare circumstances, nil compensation. Therefore, it is not necessary to amend the Constitution in the manner that is currently proposed. A second point there is that amendment to the Constitution is viewed as unnecessary as it undermines the foundational values of the Constitution. It is irrational and has the effect that the Constitution will be treated by the state as it would with any other legislation. Given the Apex Court had recognized that the real problem with land reform is not with the courts or the laws of the country, an unnecessary amendment undermines the rule of law since it ignores the findings of that court. And lastly, there was no distinction made between compensation for land and other forms of property that could conceivably be needed by the state. And the eighth theme that came out is around the expropriation of property without compensation. And the belief is that with expropriation without compensation, some submitters made proposals about the type of land that must be expropriated without compensation. One of the proposals included in the expropriation without compensation of land currently in possession of communicare, because that it was dispossessed and hijacked from South African housing beneficiaries. And the submitter proposed the following, that all property and land stocks in the portfolio of Communique be expropriated without compensation, and that social housing beneficiaries who are residing in Communique's housing stocks be issued with title deeds, and that land hijacked by Communique be expropriated without compensation to the state for social housing. That is just an example that was given by the submitter, especially around property or land that is owned by Communique at this point in time. Chairperson, that actually concludes the report around the written submissions. I will now go to chapter 3. And chapter 3 is about public hearings that members actually conducted public hearings in. Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to go straight. If you look at what you see now, the outline of this chapter, to go straight to the third bullet or information in the third bullet that summarizes the responses of members of the public from the different sites of public hearings in the provinces. Can I do that, Chairperson?
I'm saying, assuming that there's no objection, proceed, but if there's objection, then we'll have to do it differently. Proceed.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm just trying to go to that page. If members can just give me a minute to try and get to the to that summary. I'm so sorry, Chairperson. It seems as if I'm moving back now.
I hope members will...
My apology to members. Yes, Chairperson, if I may go to then chapter 4, which is really about the discussion of key insights from the public participation process.
Okay.
Yes. Chairperson, you would note that I tried to edit there with the in the introduction, for example, in the first paragraph, I say there was 31st December 2020. That was the time when we got the extension, the first one. But I'm editing it as we go along. I hope the additions will actually be accepted by the committee. Basically, in terms of the submissions, both the written submissions and also during public hearings, which are actually given the province in this report. In terms of those supporting the bill, first thing is that differentiating the 2018 CRC public participation and the current ad hoc committee public hearings and discontent about the delays to amend Section 25 was one of the things that was said in the public hearing. So whilst there was appreciation of this process from some sectors of the society, there was also a confusion of the joint constitutional review committee public hearings process that took place in 2018. Some among the speakers dubbed the current public hearing processes as a waste of time and resources because they have given the view, Chairperson, that Section 25 of the Constitution must be amended. There were kind of sort of, there was frustration around coming back to the public again, talking about Section 25 of the Constitution. So they were still expressing their support for changes to be made to Section 25 of the Constitution. The second point was around the role of traditional leadership, including the Khoi and Son institutions after land has been expropriated and reallocated. And a commonly held view from most of the meeting is that the institutions of traditional leadership play a significant role in the affairs of many rural communities in South Africa, and their existence is entrenched in the Constitution. So some of the traditional leaders, especially in the Eastern Cape, raised concerns about the failure of the ad hoc committee to consult their institutions and pay courtesy visits to traditional leaders prior to public hearings. In some areas, however, some members of the communities expressed concern over lack of security of tenure on land under institutions of traditional leadership. For example, to a speaker in Potchefstroom said, and I quote, "I agree with the amendment of Section 25, and land must be under the custodianship of the state, including mineral resources. I ask that you ensure independent tenure rights for women, because when the husbands die, some chiefs dispossess them of their land rights," and unquote. So that was a speaker in Potchefstroom, Chairperson. And the other issue that came out of that chair was that the cultural meaning and significance of land is vitally important factor in the debate about acceleration of land redistribution. And the point made there is that land must be expropriated and returned to its rightful owner, because land ownership gives a sense of belonging to many African communities. And some of the speakers mentioned that land is not only a commodity to be traded with, it It is a form of identity, and it is a symbol of dignity, hence a call for returning of land to the rightful owners. And that landlessness strips people of their sense of belonging and dignity. These are the issues that members need to engage with when looking at the clauses of this year. People also spoke to appalling living conditions of the majority of the landless in the informal settlements and on commercial farms with little or no security of tenure at all. So providing equitable access to land equates to not only restoration of the dignity of those who were previously dispossessed, but also for accessing economic opportunities, shelter, and other forms of human advancement. Another point there, Chairperson, under that bullet is that the expressed need for land is therefore not only limited to agricultural, mining, commercial, and residential purposes. It is also needed for cultural, religious, and spiritual purposes, namely the performance of traditional rituals, growing of traditional herbs, which are vitally important to the identity and mode of belonging of some of the African people. So the cultural and religious practices are of great importance to many African people. It is of great concern to traditional healers who reported that landlessness has turned them into criminals because when they are found on farms harvesting medicinal plants, they are charged for trespassing and contravening the bylaws. And the next point, Chairperson, under those who are supporting the bill, is that the redress of legacy of colonial and apartheid land disposition require bold legislative changes and capacity to implement policies and legislation. So unequal land distribution in South Africa is a continuation of colonial and apartheid legacy, a design that places majority of Black communities in the periphery of the economy of South Africa. And that the failure to accelerate the redistribution of land to the dispossessed is seen as a continuation of that injustice, and it goes against the basis for South African constitution. The next point under that is that the legacy of colonial and apartheid dispossession manifests in what the NDP, the National Development Plan, characterizes as the triple challenges that has engulfed South Africa and commits the state to address, i.e., or that is the inequality, unemployment, and poverty. These challenges can be traced back to land dispossession, destruction of African peasantry, and cohesion of Africans into laborers on what became white-owned mines and farms, which some strongly argued that they were stolen property. So the expropriation of land and redistribution to the poor must create generational wealth, and land dispossession and its legacy still persist because poverty is passed from one generation to another. Sorry, Chairperson, it's my phone there.
Okay.
So the outcome of the existing constitutional framework, if we're looking at the last paragraph there, for land reform is that land reform has become very expensive, especially when government payment of compensation was based on Section 25(3) of the Constitution, that is the market value of the property. The willing buyer, willing seller principle has not assisted South Africa to speedily address the challenge of landlessness that confronts the majority. So another point, Chairperson, under those who support the changes to the bill, is that the 1913 cut-off date in Section 25(7), that is the restitution, has failed to facilitate redress for colonial land dispossession. So the restoration of land rights to victims of forced removals is recognized as a vital point of a redress, and the forced removals as provided for in law can be traced back to the Native Land Act of 1913. However, land dispossession did not start in 1913. That is the argument. So by 1913, many of the traditional communities had already been dispossessed of their land by the settlers. Chair, I will move to the next page and deal with another point that relates to the poor implementation of legislation giving effect to Section 25(7), which is around restitution, and the lack of information on status of understanding land claims as a cause for concern about the capacity of the state to address the public demand for land. So there are two categories of land claims laws with the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights, as provided for in Section 25(7), and in terms of the Restitution of Land Rights Act number 22 of 1994, as amended. On the one hand, it is the pre-1998 land claims, commonly referred to as old order land claims. And on the other hand is the 2014 land claims, commonly referred to as the new order claims. So many speakers came forward and asked the ad hoc committee to ensure that the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights provide them with progress reports about the status of the land claims, which is what the committee is requested to do. The plea was especially dominant in urban areas where the commission has paid financial compensation to some claimants and not others. Further, about the implications of the constitutional court order that interdicts the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights from processing their land claims until all the old order claims were finalized. That is the Lamosa court judgment effect on the 2014 land claims. As many stated that accelerated land reform require capacity to implement legislation which gives effect to the constitutional imperatives for land reform. The next point, Chair, is the interconnectedness of minerals, water and land rights, and transformation of the ownership of natural resources must be provided for in the Constitution. So the dominant view from the public hearings is that the return of the land to the majority is long overdue. However, the separation of land, water and mineral rights was identified as a limitation to agrarian transformation. Some beneficiaries of land reform reported that the failure of land reform farms in some areas was linked to lack of access to water alongside other post-settlements. And they have cited their experiences where farms were allocated, but the water rights were owned by someone else. In most cases, previous land owners. So they therefore suggested expropriation of land without compensation should include water rights, and that communities in mining areas said their lived experiences of poverty and deprivation because their land from which they derived livelihoods was owned by mining companies. Especially speakers in Emelo, they noted that they have no rights of access and cannot use land for productive purposes. Furthermore, mining companies do not invest in those communities. As a result, there is higher levels of joblessness and poverty in those areas. And the plea to the committee was that when land is given back to people, the mining rights should also be expropriated and reallocated to the land rights holders, as it was said by one of the speakers, and the report actually puts the quotation there. Page 84 now. The Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Act is seen as one of the legislative instruments through which municipalities can help rural and peri-urban communities to be allocated well-located land for residential purposes and land-based livelihoods activities, and that such land should have adequate water supply and be suitable for mining purposes, for farming purposes as well. The next point, Chairperson, is that rural and urban land needs and provision of security of tenure. So the dominant narrative here equates land redistribution with agriculture. However, some speakers at the public hearings argued that land redistribution must meet a range of needs rather than a narrow focus on farming. Apart from the focus on agriculture, creating opportunities for both on-farm and off-farm agricultural development, the current process to accelerate the redistribution of land must address the needs of landless people in urban areas who live in informal settlements, in backyards as tenants and other household families, and homeless people living on the streets with no place to call home. And that due to the apartheid spatial planning, many people migrate to towns and cities for employment or other economic opportunities. Many of these people earn meagre wages to enable them to purchase land or houses in the urban areas or cities. They therefore end up renting places to stay, perpetuating their poverty, and another point that Chairperson is that land ownership empowers people in a sense that they become less dependent on government for their livelihood. As argued elsewhere in this report, giving people security of tenure is restoration of people's dignity. Therefore, it was recommended that government must release well-located state land in cities and towns for human settlement. Furthermore, it should also expropriate without compensation public land and unoccupied land in cities and towns in order to meet the urban land needs, including residential purposes and urban agriculture. In the same strand of restoring dignity to South Africans, there were requests for land redistribution to prioritize vulnerable farm dwellers and labor tenants who live on privately owned farms. I think that was said earlier in the report. So I will move to the next point, Chairperson, which is around the custodianship of land and tenure regimes. Speakers suggested that there must be a complete overhaul of the tenure regime and custodianship of land in South Africa. And there were varied perspectives on this question of custodianship. Among the supporters of expropriation of land without compensation and the amendment of the bill, the opposing views are between those suggested by the state, suggesting that the state should be the sole owner of all land in South Africa, and those who support freehold ownership. As will be seen in the specific proposals, those arguments for state custodianship suggest that after expropriation of land and transfer of land to the state must equitably allocate the parcels of land to the citizen. And foreign ownership of land must be strictly discouraged. Similarly, the allocation of land use rights to foreign nationals must be prohibited, and priority should be given to South Africans. And in order to avoid what is happening in the human settlements sector, where there are allegations of undocumented foreign nationals occupying low-cost housing, the state must build adequate capacity to administer land allocation and expectation. And those in favor of the status quo, the current one, with regards to land tenure repeat to change freehold tenure over land, they expressed concern with regards to state custodianship on the basis that the current state of affairs with the state-owned entities and the risks associated with is referred to as state capture. In addition, they also question the capacity of the state to manage such huge portfolios of land. For example, the state is struggling to complete a full land audit that clearly tells who occupies what land and what that piece of land is being used for. So the custodianship of the land by the state, they suggested, was unlikely to result in meaningful land redistribution. And some beneficiaries of proactive land acquisition strategy, which is PLAS program, where state-owned land is leased to farmers, requested government to transfer farms to them in order to increase certainty and security of tenure. Another point here is around the expropriation of what land and for who and how NIL compensation will be determined. Among those in support of expropriation of land, there were those who requested Parliament to rethink the strategy for acquisition and reallocation of land. Some expressed concern with regards to availability of proper plans and strategies for expropriation of land without compensation. These were the questions that people asked with regards to that point. And the very same questions stem from concerns that expropriation of land must mostly benefit the elite, while those who deserve land might not benefit at all. And some suggested that there must be an introduction to policies that the elite to have undue benefit from the land that is going to be expropriated. And with regards to determination of nil compensation, others suggested that a legislative framework must provide guidance to a competent minister who will execute the expropriation on behalf of the state. It was noted that vulnerable groups are often overlooked by those implementing land reform. In this regard, some members of the public allege that there was systematic exclusion of women and youth by denying them equal opportunities to access and own land in their own right. Whilst everyone says that youth is the future, land reform program has, to a large extent, ignored prioritizing youth. Chairperson, now we'll move to those who are actually opposing the bill in terms of what they are saying. And that starts from page 86 of the report. The first point that is made is around the consensus about the need for land redistribution in South Africa to redress the injustices of the past. It is recognized that the colonial and apartheid land disposition drove off many people from their homes, and the Constitution, especially the Bill of Rights, makes that recognition and places an obligation on the state to redress the injustice. So the failure of land reform to meet the demand for land in South Africa is not a constitutional problem. It is the capacity of the state and the incompetence of the officials and lack of implementation policies and lack of policy clarity that causes that. Therefore, the bill was rejected because it was not addressing the real challenges of land reform. And none of the people who that objected to the bill was against land reform as it is currently provided for in the Constitution. They argued that the state should, in fact, speed up resolution of all land claims and redistribute land as discussed below. The amendment bill was not necessary as it just was a smokescreen to the real government inefficiencies in the implementation of Section 25 of the Constitution, including the provision of expropriation in the public interest, as it is already provided for in the Constitution. The next point here is the current demand for land means that there must be acceleration of the pace of land redistribution, promotion of food security, and inclusive economic development. The current Section 25 of the Constitution has adequate provisions for a faster land reform program. And the public hearing showed that people were hungry, there was poverty and unemployment. And these are the challenges that government should address through the implementation of land reform rather than the expropriation of property without compensation that may result in the following: the lack of investment in the economy, migration of skilled farmers, leaving the country with unproductive farms, thus contributing to land, to food insecurity, expropriation of farms, expropriation of farm land without compensation, farming and agriculture that is characterized and highly dependent on mortgages, and that most farms run on loans from banks. So expropriation of land, whilst it will take land from one race to another, it will unfortunately not result in economic growth and improved food production. The next point here is that instead of expropriation of land, government must secure people's tenure rights by giving out title deeds to land reform beneficiaries and those people living in township. So there was a demand for residential land seen in most public hearings did not suggest wholesale expropriation of productive land. Speaker suggested that what it means is that government should provide for residential land in urban areas as well. I'm not going to go through that list, Chair, but move to the next point, which is the expropriation of land without compensation, infringes on secure property rights, which are a cornerstone of thriving economies. So the expropriation of land without compensation equals theft and will have detrimental effects on the economy of South Africa. And the fact that it happened in the past does not mean that in the modern democracy it should be allowed to happen. That there are also many people who worked hard to purchase their properties and such cannot be expropriated without compensation. So many speakers who are not in support of the changes to Section 25 have suggested that South Africa should draw lessons about expropriation of land without compensation from Zimbabwe and its effect on the economy of the country. That is the presentation, Chairperson. Thank you.
Dr. Tuli, thank you for what you have done. You know, incorporate all these oral, written submissions and the public hearings is not a small thing.
Chair, you're not audible by my side.
Members.
Chair, we've lost you a bit. In the absence of the chair and for the minister for deputy chair.
Advocate Bonani, may you just unmute the chair because you can be able to do that because I think he does mute himself.
In the interest of time, in the absence of the chair, do we have got any possibility?
I'm not absent. I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Now we can hear the chair.
Okay. I'm saying that I think we have a consolidated report on public hearings, oral and written submissions. Now, this gives us a good basis for moving forward. What I want to hear from Advocate Bonani is when was the report sent to all the members? Advocate Bonani? Hello?
Hello, Chair. We can hear you.
Yes. I want an answer from Advocate Ramano. When was the report sent to all the members?
Chairperson, it doesn't look like he is in the meeting now. I don't see him.
Do you know when the report...
The report, Chair, was sent to members in November. The first time it was sent to members in November of 2020. And then after the meeting that we had, members requested that they get the report and it was sent to them as well. Thank you, sir.
Dr. Lotrit was saying that she has just received the report, but you say it was sent in November. Dr. Lotrit? Dr. Lotrit? Is she there?
Yes, Chair.
You say you have just received the report, but it was sent a long time ago.
Well, we received one on Wednesday.
Okay. And the other parties...
No, Chair, we received, all of us received the report in November last year. That, and there's proof there, because that email that was sent shows who else received. So if people were negligent about this, they can hold us at ransom for that.
No, Honorable Shibambo, thank you very much, because I really want to ascertain that the administration has not failed in distributing the report. So if Dr. Lotrick or anyone have not received the report on time, that cannot be the fault of the administration. And therefore, let's move forward as I propose. We are saying that we received the report, but I think the individual members need to go back to their principles and say, this is the report. Are there any issues that you want us to consider when we go back? And then we agree on the next meeting where we can consider the report for adoption or without amendment. Would that make sense?
Chairperson, can we chip in?
Yes, certainly.
Chairperson?
Yes, proceed. Honorable Mrasa.
Thank you very much, Prof. and Chairperson, to this all-important body of committee. I think in all fairness, Chairperson, after the presentation of the report, there is a need that members must have a bite so that you come at the tail end and sum up. And, but in any case, thank you very much for the opportunity given. Let us take this opportunity, Chair, to welcome and appreciate the report as presented, both written and the report from the public hearings. And listening to everything that happens given here, Chair, it becomes very clear that the report indeed is not only factual, but it's fully elucidated and elaborated. Number one.
On the point of order, Chairperson.
Chair, I'm at your mercy.
Chairperson, on the point of order, can we be recognized, please?
The order is raised, the chair is nowhere, so let me proceed. Because I can't adjudicate on the order raised, only the chair can adjudicate.
Maybe you'll understand the context of this, because from the beginning, maybe you were not there when the chair opened this meeting, that
I was there.
We are going to receive the report, and then we then go to our political parties and then engage on it there. And then the consideration and deliberations will happen in the subsequent stage. It's only now that you are proposing that there must be deliberations, and before that is granted, you're already deliberating, which is not the agreed framework of this meeting. So, and I think that is out of order, because we can agree on a certain framework and then you then engage in something contrary.
You see, we avoid dialogue, Honorable Roli and Honorable Shibambo.
The chair is on the platform. It's just that he gets delayed. It's the gadget that makes him get delayed to hear what is being said. But having said that, Chair, are you here? probably Declan will assist so that if the meeting becomes later than what it wants to be.
Sorry, Honorable Lusuma, it's Gwebu here. I'm on the phone with the chair. He's asking if you can be chairing while he's trying to reconnect. He's having a connection problem.
Okay, no, thank you very much for that. You assisted a lot. Comrade, Honorable Ronnie, the meeting earlier on, when started, when the chair laid the foundation, how we're going to navigate in this important meeting, was that let's receive a report that the administration through Dr. Kala was, as she did, she went through it in the most areas that she felt that they are important in terms of us. Not saying that you didn't read it, but also to hear in terms of line by line, which has been done. So now what needs to follow is that we had you with a report, or there's another clause in terms of the pages that she skipped that would like her to read, like the conclusion, she didn't read it. Other than that, we must then say we have received formally, the report has been now formally presented before the committee, and various political parties will go back and discuss it and study the report and then come back at the immediate future and to look at our pronouncement in terms of the report, having engaged on the report, because we must do that, but not today. That's what the chair said. He further said that he's not going to stop anyone also who gets tempted to say something.
Yes, but I got tempted. Why don't you allow me?
Okay, so you must declare that you have been tempted, then we can listen to you.
No, point of order, Chairperson, let's run one consistent principle of what do you want to do with the report. If you want to deliberate on the report, you can open it. If that is why you want to change the earlier decision, you can take that approach. But it's not advisable. Let us go and engage with the report as well, and then we'll then come back to have deeper deliberations and reflections on what is contained in there. You must remember that these are issues that we have dealt with from the public hearings and from the submissions that came from different members. All of us were there in terms of these issues. What we have to deal with now as the committee is to take all these issues into consideration when we are enacting the legislation. That has to then affect the constitutional amendment. So the temptation really is not out of context, it's out of order.
Let me say that because we are not too far from each other. Honorable Ronnie, let us not engage today. Let's have a chance to reflect and come back as a matter of principle. It will be in order because it doesn't disadvantage anyone. The only thing is that on that day, we'll go straight to engagement. Allow me just so that we can have progress. Can you just hold on a minute? I can see other hands because it can't be a dialogue whether we stick to the principle, which is very important, or not. But let me allow the hands that I see on the platform. Is Honorable Anneli, because it's another issue that we are bringing in, so let me not suppress other members. Honorable Anneli and Honorable Mashati, over to you as I've mentioned your name. Then we'll come back and then have a way forward.
Thank you, thank you, Honorable Soma. It's not only about receiving report. The point I made at our last meeting was that we have to have something that we can measure the report against, and that is actually having sight of those written submissions. We know that we had members with the public hearings, the oral hearings, but at this point, it's not just a matter of going back to our parties and discussing the report. We have to, for ourselves, verify and satisfy ourselves of what was contained in those written reports. So it would be best if we were allowed time to actually go and do that.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Matlase, I can see your hand is up.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me also agree with your summary, Sal, on the issue of us not engaging on the report at this point, but to note it what and we await the next meeting where we will to discuss at length. However, I also want to maybe Dr. Lotret might, Honorable Lotret might want to indicate to us what she means when she says we need all the detail, because I in my understanding, the summary that was presented here was actually accommodating all the written submission and public hearings. What exactly to what does she mean? She wants the exact submission that were made to discuss land by land, because really that will not necessarily assist us, because we've got an administration that has done, that has consolidated a report based on those particular submissions. But if that is what she says, maybe she can confirm. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. No. I think she did raise the matter in our last meeting, and she was promised to be given that, but for better clarity for the administration, so that they can finish all of us with the relevant information that the members have asked. Then she can just unpack that one so that we can move then, and also check whether this chair is still on. Honorable Ronnie, I'm still dealing with the issue of principle here, and we agreed earlier on nobody had it when the chair opened the meeting, and I see no harm to stick to what, so that we're running the meeting per our agreement.
You didn't know what I was going to say. I was never saying we are engaging the report. Give me topic.
Honorable Ronnie, I take your point. Can you just bear with us for now? Honorable Lottery, can you unpack and assist the administration, not for the purpose of the meeting, in terms of what more information you need other than what has the administration has gone through on the report that we all of us have received?
Yes, thank you, Honorable Lusuma. It is not in any way to doubt what is contained in the report. This is purely our constitutional duty as members, that we cannot only rely on administration to have a look at written submissions and then write a report according to what they perceive. There could be things that are missing that we don't know of. With the public hearings at the specific venues, members were in fact present and could monitor the whole process. So with that, we can in fact deliberate on the report. But I'm afraid, as with the previous committee, Constitutional Review Committee, we found that there were many of the submissions that we knew that people submitted were not included. So this is a very important check and balance process for us, because we are busy with a constitutional amendment that as members we satisfy ourselves. So in practical ways is that the chair last we gave us the permission that we can contact the administration, and we can ask to have access, and we can then satisfy ourselves. So it is not a question of all the submissions now being presented to the committee. It is for parties being given sufficient time to satisfy themselves to go and have a look at those submissions.
Okay. Before I just sum up so that we can close the meeting, Honorable Mrasetla, can you finish up your point and then I summarize and move forward?
No, all I wanted to indicate was that this report is true. It might have been received in November, but it is coming to this portfolio committee for the very first time. And after having said what I just said now, come up to say, let's support the chair in opening my words. Let the report now be forwarded back to the members, so that when we come in our next meeting, you see, the problem, the order was raised prematurely, unnecessarily. But in any case, I wanted to indicate that we are receiving this report for the very first time on this portfolio committee. And as a result, we can go deeper and start interrogating. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, at least you have clarified the matter. And Honorable Chair, you are back. You may take over.
Yes, I want to agree with the Honorable Murasetla that the report is before the committee for the first time. And the committee is the one that must then refer the matter to the members for a mandate. Because if we say we sent in November and some people say we don't find it, we may have the difficulties going forward. So I think Honorable Murasetla's proposal is what we should go with. But let me hear other members. Honorable Shubambo and Honorable Lusuma, what is your take on what Honorable Murasetla is proposing?
Chair, thank you very much. No, I think he has come to his senses because he was saying he's tempted to engage earlier. So it's fine, we can proceed in that format. But the issue that is being raised by the Democratic Alliance, I think let's agree to it, because in the report that was presented here, the illustration is made that the written submissions are about 20 for this specific legislation. And the DA is asking for direct access to all the submissions. Let the administration send to them so that there is no space to delegitimize this process, that people were not given access to information. Let them go and read themselves if they do not trust the summary that has been provided thus far. And then I don't think that it will fundamentally change the conclusions which that are going to be reached ultimately. So let them be given all the information. Can be sent to everyone. Can be sent to even to Afro Forum and everyone else.
Thank you, Honorable Sbambo. I think that is a positive approach to things, so that no one should think that they were not taken on board. Honorable Wayne Ipet, do you want to come?
No, Chair. I think that we are in agreement in terms of the way forward. Just to confirm that indeed this is the first time that we've actually received the report, which was on the 10th of February, Wednesday. So I think that the way forward in terms of we take this draft report back to our caucuses, and then we can begin to interrogate at our next meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Gumede.
Oh, Chair, I thought it's me.
Who's speaking?
No, I'll wait for you to call my name, Chair. My apologies.
Oh, okay. No, let's have the Honorable Gumede and then Honorable Suma.
Chair, I've got a feeling that some issues based now are very substantive matters, which it may be unfair that we take a decision that we agree or support. Whereas the matter was to note the report, it's better that than whatever other issues that will have relevance to the report be considered when we consider the report. Because we will then backtracking if we do that. It's a very substantive matter when we take a decision that other people or all of us be given the report. It may be rightfully so, but I'm saying it's not at this time correct to take that decision. Let it be considered at our next meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Gumede. I think that's very reasonable, and it accommodates and I think sums up the other sentiments. So yes, Honorable Losuma, you are next here.
Yes, because I was going to say if I didn't want to raise this one, which is outside what we have agreed even earlier on when you made your initial opening remarks, it's safe to say that your office and the administration then must take note that what we are agreeing on has got an impact in terms of the actual date on the program that has been circulated. Hence, it needs to be reviewed as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Lesuma. Honorable members, is there any other hand? Wayne, I see your hand is still up.
My apologies, Chair. I will take it down now.
Honorable Shubambo, do you want to come back again?
No, I'm covered. Chair, can you just ask the other members of the microphones because it's interrupting with the facility.
Oh, yes. But thank you, Honorable members. I think we have reached agreement on the way forward. We will take into account what Suma is saying about the date, and we'll keep in touch with you, bearing in mind that time is not on our side. We have to conclude these matters as soon as possible, but we don't want to rush anything. We want to take everybody along because we are looking for a South African solution today. Land question, not a solution that suits one or the other party. Thank you very much for your participation. And then Leader, on that note.